I'm Nolan Giles, and welcome to The Big Interview. My guest today is Dries Van Noten. This Belgian designer has won a cult global following since a triumphant arrival in fashion as a member of the Antwerp Six, an enigmatic young group of designers who emerged from the city's Royal Academy of Fine Arts in the early 1980s. In the years since, he has remained a pivotal figure in the fashion industry, pop icons and first ladies alike choosing to adorn themselves in Dries Van Noten garments, marked by magnificent fabrics, unusual prints and an incredible use of colour. His unique approach to growing his brand has been as meticulously well thought out as the men's and women's wears collections he debuts each season. Van Noten has opted to shun traditional advertising, investing in his bricks and mortar shops and extraordinary fashion shows to reach his audience in a more direct and intimate manner. He has also avoided the lure of the big luxury groups, remaining fiercely independent to this day. Despite the international reach of his brand, Van Noten still has his headquarters in Antwerp, where every garment passes through a stringent quality check before being dispatched to high-end retailers from Tokyo to London. And it's in Antwerp where I am delighted to be joined by the fashion designer himself. Dries Van Noten, welcome to The Big Interview, and thank you for making the time to join Monocle here today in Antwerp. Throughout this conversation, I'd like to sort of look back a little bit on your career, but before we go all the way back, let's just go back a couple of months and talk about your recent spring-summer 2017 women's wear show in Paris. In terms of a spectacle, there was a lot going on there, not just in the fashion. You know, you had these beautiful floral arrangements held in like giant blocks of melting ice. For the viewer, it was a beautiful thing to behold. But I'd really like to hear from yourself, you know, the intent of this particular show in line with this collection and how it represents where you are at as a designer today.
Every collection for me is kind of an evolution. So I'm not a designer who is doing revolutions. It's not that I try to reinvent clothes. So this collection also came along by the wish of saying, okay, I want to do something quite dark with contrast, like big flower bouquets printed nearly tight on the garment, because we had so many different inspiration points. One of the inspiration points being Araki, where you have then, of course, the kimono prints, and then also the cords and the wrapping and kind of the brutal, kind of the rather hard and harsh element to it. So all the black, of course, made me also think about Victoriana. And in that way, you had kind of the Raki side, you had the Japanese side, and you had the Victoriana side. So that was a starting point for the collection. Then, of course, automatically, when I think about the collection, I start also to think already about how we're going to present it. How can we go show it? And then came the idea to collaborate with Azuma-san, because we worked together for the exhibition in Paris, what we did now 2 years ago. And he came up with that brilliant idea, which he did already once in Tokyo, with freezing the flowers, which I loved as a connection to the collection, where you had a frozen beauty. You have something of the past there also, because you know the taxidermy and all the typical frozen kind of the flowers in porcelain and everything what they used also in the Victorian times. So he had so many different connections to that, which I really loved.
And that idea of an evolution rather than a revolution, I mean, there always seems to be this amazing level of fantasy in your work, which I guess evolves from season to season. But in terms of the more fantastical elements in your designs, how much of that comes from real reference points like you were talking about before, and how much of that is just sort of being in your studio, working with your team and thinking about things creatively and imaginatively?
I always say that I'm a spoiled person, so I have nobody watching over my shoulder saying what I have to do. So I have total liberty, but of course total liberty is impossible, because I have also the freedom which I have. I have also like things which I have to think about, production possibilities and all these things. So I'm also a realistic person. But I can start every season with a clean table, and that for me is very important. I don't want to carry with me like a heritage of the season before, saying, oh yes, and this was selling well, and that you have to do, and that you have to repeat again. So for me, I'm now already for such a long time in fashion, and I want to be excited. I want to also to excite my team. I have a lot of young people around me, so, and I have to challenge them. So for me, the only way to do that is to surprise them and to surprise myself. And my challenge to those young people is also, okay, if I tell you the story, that's the way how we start a collection. So I tell them kind of a story, or I show them a photo, or I give them a smell or things like that. So it's all like rather abstract things. And then they have to come back to me with also surprising things, and especially things which I wouldn't think about, because I always try to say to my team, like, don't try to think as I do, because this I can do better. I think the way that I think, and I make the associations, but make different associations. Make the story which I tell you much richer and much more surprising. And that's, in fact, that's a fun thing. So in that, at the end, we also come then with elements like, okay, like, where is that coming from? But we find always a way to tie that in the collection.
So right now, as a designer, you are getting a lot of, I guess, collaboration happening in-house with your team, and I'm guessing with a lot of sort of young creative people, young designers. I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on sort of young designers at the moment. From what I've read, Bill Cunningham used to sneak you into shows when you were younger. Yeah. And you've talked in the past about young people not having the opportunity to see fashion. I mean, today it seems like young people are so exposed to it. And I'm wondering what your take is on the talent that you're getting in here in Antwerp.
Yeah, but okay, young people are now really exposed to fashion and to images. Especially, they are not exposed to fashion, but mostly to images of fashion, which is a completely different thing for me than being exposed to fashion. I think being at a fashion show or seeing an image of a fashion show, it's two completely different things. You don't live the emotion there. And I think it's just like a big blur of information what you get, and especially young people now. I think with the whole system fashion is for the moment, it's such a pity, because it's just an overdose of images. And also the images have to become louder and louder, because most of the images are seen on your smartphone or on a computer screen. So you start to think about fashion more as a visual trick than you have to be very loud. You have to be really like, you can't use small motifs anymore because they start to tremble on the screen. You get a moiré, so you can't, no sense to do interesting back drapes or something like that, because nobody sees them. It's all these things, like fashion became kind of so poor in that way, and people are so immersed to so many visual things that it's just too much. I often say to the people in my team, like, now it's a no computer day, so they really have to close their screens and go back into books. But if, for instance, if you do research, you click on your screen, on your computer, and you see like one big blur of images, and you click and you click and you click. When you go into a book and you force yourself to look from the first page until the last page, you start to feel the structure in it. You can be carried away. It's like going to do research on a certain artist or go do an exhibition of a certain artist. When you go to an exhibition, the curator takes you on a trip. You see an evolution. You see a timeline. You see why. You see contrast, and you're carried away with it. So it's all these things, and I think for the moment also, fashion is everywhere. So many different images, celebrities are there, all these things, and it's too much.
So if it's too much, how do you navigate it? I mean, you know, we were just discussing before the window displays in your shop here, and the elements of beauty and theatre and everything, and in the physical aspect. Is that how you try and get your brand across? Is make it as much of a physical, real experience as possible?
For me, it's a real experience, but also in that way, of course, the thing is, we don't make publicity. I looked in an organic way. It was not like, because often people ask me, okay, how did you come up with the idea of not doing publicity? I'm sorry, it didn't happen like that. I simply had no money to make publicity. So then you try to find other ways. And then the moment the company was big enough, then we said, okay, now we're not going to spend money on publicity, but we're going to spend money on a fashion show. And then one fashion show became a men's and a women's fashion show. In that way, we do now 4 fashion shows a year, where I use rather big budgets, because that for me is really like the finale. So when I build up a collection, it's really kind of making a movie, or making kind of telling a full story. And then not doing a fashion show would be for me such shame, because there all those elements come together with the music and the invitation and the light and the sound and all these things. So that's, yeah, for me, it makes sense. And the same thing with the lookbooks, the books that we make, the windows in the stores, all these elements are part of that. And I need that to express myself. And that's the way, because only making clothes for me would be boring. I like to tell a story with the clothes.
And I mean, that is such a strong element. You know, you do transport us to all of these different worlds within your shows. Is there any tricks and formulas to getting them right, or is it just about being as creative and exploring your concepts as far as you can go?
The person who helps me always putting the shows together is Etienne Rousseau, and he always says, like, when you see the trick, you lose the magic. I really want to be surprised every time. I want to surprise myself. So the thing which scares me most is to find kind of a trick or a system. So I really don't want to have, like, okay, we take something ethnic, we take some beautiful fabrics, we take a few interesting shapes, we mix that, and hopla, there you have a Dries Van Noten collection. That for me would be too easy. I love to work. I work a lot, and I push also my team to work a lot, and also not working physically, but also especially mentally, that they go with me on a trip and that they travel with me to all the different starting points and look at, go to as many exhibitions as they can and look at books and look at their computer screen and everything to be really informed. But not in a systematic way, not like, okay, we have to go to an exhibition, there we find inspiration, or we go to Frieze in London, we see like a lot of artists, young things happening, we take a few photos, we make a mood board, and there it is. Some seasons we start from a mood board, and some seasons we say, like, mood board, no, we don't need it, we have a person which we want to dress. Like last season, we had the Marchesa Cassati together with Gabriele D'Annunzio. It was not those two people which we wanted to dress. It was the love relationship, the love and hate relationship, and the very complicated relationship what they had, which was the inspiration. That's what we tried to translate in the collection. So I said, no mood boards of those two, because at the end, you start to do like film costumes. You want to dress those two people because they were so fantastic that it's too tempting to make an outfit for them. No, we have to make the outfits for the relationship between those two.
You were talking before about bringing in these influences and encouraging your staff to sort of get out there, see the world, let the conversations and the things that they see and feel inspire them. It's pretty hard to be in Europe right now and not be influenced by kind of what's happening in politics. And from what I've read, you know, you do follow politics closely. It's something that you take an interest in. I think for a lot of people, like myself included, the great creative voices, the great designers like yourself, we want you to be making statements in your work, but at the same time, we also want you to be kind of providing us with that level of escapism also in your creative output. I mean, where do you stand on that?
I'm living now. I don't know exactly what's happening, but I try to be informed of what's happening in the world. Of course, also, I read mostly my newspaper during the weekend. I have every day then my newspaper on Saturday one and Sunday another one to be a little bit like informed in the right way. And of course, I look also my computer to news and all these things like everybody does, I think. But of course, sometimes you want to escape also. I live in a beautiful house in the countryside. I know it's also kind of escapism. It's not that you are in the real world in that way. But I think you need a level of everything. I think you need a level of realism, and you need also a good portion of dreams on top of that, because otherwise you won't survive. What's the role of fashion? Is it really the role of fashion to push you with your nose into the reality? No, I think it has to reflect the reality, but it has to keep you also, keep the dream alive so that you can escape and there's something beautiful and the whole thing also.
And let's now move a little bit back into the past. As an independent business, how have you kind of managed this steady ascent? And was there a point where you're growing your business and you sort of finally thought, wow, I've made it, like this is Dries Van Noten, the brand I've wanted, or does it just continue to evolve?
It continues to evolve. When we started, okay, it was like in the 80s, so it was just, let's jump and see what's happening. It was so abstract. Nobody could believe that fashion could come from Belgium. It was just something, okay. Luckily enough, we had our team, so that was a nice thing. So it was not like an individual. So we were like, it was like six different people, different visions on fashion, but there was something, a lot of things which we had in common. So then we started, it was successful. We had our ups and downs. We had an old evolution in the 90s, I think, like whole fashion world had a huge evolution when then the big groups were involved and all the young designers started to sell their companies, like McQueen, Jill Sander, all those people who sold to the big groups. Then you had like, okay, where is fashion going to? Because it became very corporate, it became more product, it became systematic. You had bags and shoes, which became more important than clothes. So you had like the whole power game of magazines and the advertisers, all these things. So there were a lot of points that I say, okay, is this now what I want? Is this what I want to do with my life? Because, okay, making fashion and making collections as I do, you have to give yourself more than 100%. So quite often, of course, you ask yourself, is this now what I want to do with my life? So in that way, one way of to escape all that is when in the 90s, when we bought our house and garden, because I felt I needed something else to survive in fashion. I need something else. But it's constantly that you ask yourself, okay, is this now the right way? Is this now the size of company which I want? So I'm a control freak. So the whole time, I don't want that the company is getting too big, that I'm going to be more involved in meetings to see people instead of doing things myself. That's something which for me is always like the challenge. So, okay, now I want still to be hands-on, both in the organization, the commercial side, the financial side, and the creative side. And it's not that I go just to a table with all the people around it and just talk. This is not me. So that's why I think gradually the company grew bigger and bigger, but still on a very human scale.
We're talking before about how technology has impacted fashion in terms of media and advertising. But what about the physical process of designing? Because from what I understand, you know, you work with newer technologies in terms of creating fabrics. But I'm guessing as, you know, someone with such a passion for fabrics, you called yourself a fabric man, there are probably some traditional elements of this aspect of fashion that are dying out in a way.
So I love to work together with a small factories in Lyon or in Scotland. Lyon, where they had, like, for instance, all the traditional haute couture things, where they have the most incredible archives. And luckily enough, also some older people who still know those archives. When you talk with them about a certain fabric, that they say, oh yes, we did something like that in the late 60s for Dior, and we did something in the 70s for Chanel, and maybe it's something like that what you mean, and where you know also that by working with those people, you give them the chance to survive, because it's very tough for those people to continue, because besides a few couture houses, they don't have a lot of customers. And we organize and we make clothes in that, where we have then just like a top, but then only the front is in the very expensive fabric, so that it's still realistic to buy and to sell. But on the other hand, I like also to work on prints in the most digital way. And we did once a collection which I really loved. It was women's collection, where we said, okay, we're going to really work with ethnic fabrics in all different ways. So we had silk and silvery yarn woven saris in Benares. We had in Afghanistan ikats woven, which had to travel 3 days by donkey before they arrived to the first DHL point. But in the same way, we worked together then with the Ethnographic Museum here in Antwerp, where we were able to scan original fabrics, which we print then completely digital. And for me, the beauty of that collection was that sometimes you couldn't see the difference between the authentic one, which we used, and also then the digital copy of something completely authentic, museum-quality fabric. And things like that for me is, of course, to be able to do that, I'm so happy.
And you're still learning and discovering in terms of fabrication?
Luckily enough, yes, every day. I want to learn. I'm very open to see things. And I want also to have people around me who explain me things, how things work. Especially with modern technology, there are so many options for the moment. There are so many different ways to do things and to achieve things. On the other hand, also, all with all the modern times and all the possibilities what we have, fabric-wise, we lose also quite a lot of things. And because with every manufacturer who closes in France and in Italy, there is a big bunch of knowledge which disappears. But also, for instance, when you want to have a nice silk velvet, when you see those beautiful Victorian garments or 1900 fabrics and all these things, the very flat, short silk velvet fabrics, you can't make them anymore. Finished. It's impossible. Nobody still can make things like that. So we always think that we're improving, that we can do things, but weaving-wise and printing-wise, there are a lot of things which we can't do anymore, technically, which nobody still is able to do that. And that's also quite surprising sometimes.
You say that you want to be taught and you still want to learn and be inspired, but you're also, I'm guessing, at the point in your career where you have just so much knowledge to pass on and, you know, talking with such passion about these manufacturing techniques and sort of passing that on. How much do you see yourself now as an educator within your brand?
I see myself maybe more as an educator of my team. And maybe I'm quite selfish in that way, because I know also when I educate them, I get something back from them. On the other hand, also, I love to talk with young people, young fashion designers, not only fashion designers, but creative people in general. In that way, I talk every year for one day to the students, the master students of Antwerp Fashion School, who come to the office, where we give them then kind of a full explanation in the morning, explain them how I work, and in the afternoon I present them the people who work in the financial department, the commercial department, the communications. So in that way, in one day, they get like a full tour of how the company Dries Van Noten in fact works. Things like that for me is also very interesting, because in that way, the thing which I love most, of course, at the first I talk for 2 hours, 3 hours, and then I say, okay, now it's up to you to talk, and then they have to respond and say what they think and how they see their future and all these things. So it's always very, it's so interesting to talk with young people.
Let's sort of head back into Antwerp. It's been the heart and soul of your business from the beginning. What is it about this city that keeps Dries Van Noten energized as a person and as a designer?
For me, Antwerp is an ideal city to live in and to work in. So big cities for me, I don't know, I love big cities. I love to go to Paris. I love to go to New York and London. But after a few days, I want to escape. For me, it eats energy to survive there, to live there, to take the metro, to take a taxi. It asks a lot of energy. Here in Antwerp, you don't have all that. It's very easy to move around. You have a very good standard of living, so you have all the shops what you want. When you want to go to restaurants, you have exciting things happening in food. You have good stores where you can buy the best food and best cheese and everything. Culturally, you have some art, you have some theater. So everything is there what you need to survive, I think. And when it's really getting too small for you, it's very easy to escape. Paris, London, it's very close by. So we have our office in Paris, and quite often I work in the morning in here in Antwerp. I take for around lunchtime the train where I have my lunch, arrive at 2 o'clock in Paris, I do my job in Paris, and at 8 o'clock I'm back home. So it's very easy and very convenient. It's like taking nearly the RER in Paris, but we take the Thalys. So all these things are very easy. And I think in that way also you can concentrate on really what matters. And also, the city of Antwerp being quite small, you're more open-minded. In big cities, often you create your own little village. And so when you talk with people in London, I'm always surprised when I go to London. I cross London 3 times during a day when I'm in New York. I go from uptown to downtown and all these things without any problem. Quite often when you're then in a big city and you ask people, okay, yes, did you see already that store? Oh, no. But you have to understand, it's like it is in Islington and I'm in central London. So I said, yes, but okay, you just take a taxi, just go there, hurry up, because it's interesting to see. So you see that those people sometimes start to create their own small village and also create a small bunch of friends or people from the same job. And they create their own small village. And this you don't need in Antwerp, because it's too small to do that. So you meet more people of different things. So you need artists, dance. This evening I go to CD to talk about ballet and all these things. So you have like all these things happening.
Looking forward, what's inspiring you at the moment? What's going on at your studio? I don't want you to give away too much, obviously, but can you give us a little hint?
Different hints I can give you. I'm more and more intrigued by the skills of weaving and the tradition, the handcraft, all these things for me is getting more and more fascinating, and I think I'm not alone there. I always compare what's happening in the world and in fashion with food. When you see that a few years ago, when you want to go to a restaurant, it was a 3-star restaurant with a big menu and 50 different wines. Now when you go to a good restaurant, it's like a young guy somewhere in an inexpensive neighborhood who cooks like one menu for an evening, and you get some biological wine you never heard of. And that's now the new thing. And the strange thing is, in fashion, it didn't happen. In fashion, they are still doing their 3-star Michelin dinners with the fashion shows and the whole thing and the whole thing which goes with it. So I'm really intrigued in that kind of, okay, if we want to translate that, everything what's happening with the baker who makes now himself again the bread and the restaurant guy, translated to fashion, okay, where do we go to then with fashion? Where can we find fabrics which translate a little bit like the organically vegetables within 15 kilometers from the restaurant and all these things. So we work now again with a lot of small mills. We try to research all these things. So that's really fascinating, and I'm really obsessed by that.
And is there a role for the, should there be a role for the bigger designers, the bigger houses to be sort of inspired by that, I guess, local element, craft element? It's just a really interesting way that you put it, that never kind of happened in the fashion world.
It doesn't happen in the fashion world. And of course, the unlucky thing about fashion is also that we know if we do it now, okay, we can do it once or twice or three times, three seasons in a row, and then we have to move ahead. But on the other hand, to have the possibility to see, because of course, I work always with houses like that. It's just to find in the archives elements. It's only small companies who can walk with me to all those crazy things that we ask. Okay, can you print now also the backside? Can you weave fabrics which come straight from the loom and wash them, or print them first and then wash them and treat them, and all these things to what we want to do to our fabrics? So big mills won't do that. But I think it's the challenge is also go to the beauty of something rough and the beauty of something unfinished and made by hand in the imperfections. Because when you see now, a handbag can be only sold when the skin is completely perfect. But it's such a pity, because unfortunately most cows or most animals have somewhere a scar and things like that. So that's maybe just the beauty. Maybe you have to teach people again that that's also possible. It's the same thing, like people want only to eat perfect round tomatoes and perfect apples, in the same way that they want to have only like shoes or bags made of perfect leather. But it doesn't really exist. So now all leathers are completely top painted, are getting nearly more plastic than leather, just because people want perfection. But perfection doesn't exist, luckily enough.
So you've become more socially responsible as a designer, you think, as you've become more experienced?
I don't want to be like the green guy or something like that. It has nothing to do with that, but I think it's something, and I don't want to be there, the guy with my little finger saying, look, we have to respect also small companies and tradition. But it's a richness which for the moment is not really looked at. And I think there is so much beauty in that, and it's so much interesting. And I think for the moment also quite a lot of young people are interested in that. I think that it was such a long time that were like people said, like, my dream is to become a blacksmith. It's in the same way that why can't we go back then to certain materials that we say, okay. So now for me, the cashmere days are over, and now we are back in Shetland.
I'm interested in the idea of globalization in fashion. And you were talking before about how you can be based here and travel around the world. But in a way, are your influences that global? Does all that travel, or is it always something about home that always creeps into your work?
For me, it's a combination of home and traveling and everything at the same time. So there you see that I'm quite greedy, not greedy, but I really want to have a lot of elements in my collections. So only away would be not enough. There's also the home factor and the feeling well factor in the collections which I make, and my whole way of thinking. The world is there, the world is really big, but you can only experience that the world is big when you have a nice place to start from, like home. And I think when I would travel only in my mind or physically, I would be lost. I need really, traveling means also that you have a place to go back to. And that for me is also the thing in the clothes which I make. It's not only like, okay, now we are inspired by beautiful exotic fabrics. It's also like the tradition, the things what I know, the things which I feel, and just like very normalness. I think not everything has to be special. I think the fact of doing something normal is sometimes also something challenging.
Brilliant. All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for your time. You have been listening to The Big Interview with me, Nolan Giles, in conversation with Dries Van Noten. The show is produced by Guy Lutz and Bill Lutie and edited by Claire Crofton. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.